to New Zealand Vegan Podcast. I'm your host, Elizabeth Collins, and this is episode number 121. My last episode was about SAFE's Ban Factory Farming campaign. And I hope you enjoyed that or got something out of it. This week, I wanted to talk about all of the... I don't know if everybody listening is involved on the online community about what's been happening with the Vegan Society, the original Vegan Society from the UK, the one that Donald Watson founded. We live in a really multimedia world, and you can be completely oblivious to these kinds of things. There's lots of stuff that I don't know what's going on, because when I go on the internet, I try to just go onto my Facebook page and share stuff for anyone interested, or I just am a moderator on Gary Francione's Facebook page. Although the other moderators do such a good job that I hardly ever have to do any moderating on there. I also did a street stall recently, which I'll talk about in this episode. I finally did a street stall in the winter. This winter, it's been a really long time. So what I was just saying is that, so there may be people who never go on the Facebook, or if they do, they don't go on Gary Francione's page, or maybe they don't go on any abolitionist page. You can go on Facebook and completely just be involved in like a food blog or something and have no idea that there's quite, things being exposed that are really troubling. And I want to just talk about them and talk about the significance of them and the importance of why it goes on. But first I'll talk about my street stall. I finally did one, and Sophie Andrews made me beautiful chocolate cupcakes to give out, and they were a real hit, of course. And, you know, there's a couple of people, there was two people who came by, who come by quite regularly, and, they never really, one of them we've talked to quite a bit. I don't know him. He's a complete stranger to me. So what I try to remember when I meet people is I know nothing about them. And I don't know whether they have some kind of mental illness, you know, for real. I mean, people have mental illnesses. And until it really manifests itself or becomes obvious, you can sort of really not know. But I kind of suspect that he has some kind of personality disorder, as it's called. I don't even know if that's a good word, but sort of erratic. I just can't really figure, just like a little bit, you know, it's intangible, really. You just meet someone and you think, something's different. So anyway, I've asked him to leave a couple of times before. He'll talk and he'll want to hang out and stuff, but not really. He does talk a little bit about veganism, but he makes really, I mean, that's what we're there for, so we keep trying to talk to him about it, but it doesn't seem like it's hard to explain, but anyway, it doesn't seem to be really of good use of our time and energy to speak to this person. In regards to veganism, I'm not saying that he's not a worthy human being and he hasn't got a right to be spoken to or anything like that. I'm just saying you got to sort of choose where you spend your energy. So, long story short, I refused to give him a cupcake this time. He's had so many, and I just said, you know what? No, you cannot have a cupcake. You know what did it for me? You meet very few people who admit to certain things to you. And he admitted to being a racist because we were talking about veganism, of course, and we were talking about speciesism. And I'm sure I've had this conversation with him before, but like I said, he's kind of erratic. And so then we started talking about, it's like racism, you know, and he's like, well, not all racism is bad. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what is he saying? And then he started talking about how he thinks it's perfectly acceptable that he doesn't want anybody not of color in his place. And he just started talking very racist, but not in a violent way. Like, he's like, I would never hurt any other races, or, and I wouldn't care if they wanted to live next door to me or in the apartment next door, but I just don't want to invite them in because I just don't even want to say anymore. So I just said, you know what, you can leave. And he's like, can I have a cupcake? I was like, no, you can't have a cupcake. And I'm hoping that he won't come back, really. It's a waste of time to speak to someone like that. So don't waste your time. And it's upsetting. So don't bother. You know, there's plenty of other wonderfully open-minded people out there who you're going to reach and who are worth, you know, talking to. And like I said, I don't know if he has some kind of, or if he's just, you know, really disturbed. I don't know, just whatever. He's not. You know, I'm not afraid of him. He doesn't. I don't feel any fear of him as being an unpredictable or violent. I don't get that vibe from him. He seems pretty harmless in terms of physical safety. Okay. So yeah, so it's interesting. It's just very rare, like, you meet this one or two odd person. And if you're on the street in a big city, and Auckland's not really a big city compared to the world, but it's probably the biggest city in New Zealand. It's definitely the biggest population. And, you know, there's people who hang out in the streets, and there's, you know, drug addicts and alcoholics, and that, you know, if you're out in the street kind of doing this kind of thing, you'll meet those kinds of you'll meet people like that as well. You know, I always meet one or two who are like that, and sometimes they're regulars, and you know, sometimes they, you know, they might be a bit unpredictable and things. Oh gosh, I'm going to scare people away from doing a street stall, aren't I? Don't be scared. I'm not saying, it's just you meet interesting people from all walks of life, but because you're standing on the street for hours and hours and they feel comfortable with you, probably some of the street wanderers, you know, there are people who really have nowhere to go. They have nowhere to go. They don't have jobs to go to, and they don't have homes to go to. They might live in a dorm or some kind of facility. So they're out in the street all day, and that's boring, and they want to talk. So occasionally, you know, you might meet people like that. What really helps is to have food, and I always share my food. Like, I take food along to eat because I'm there all day, and I always share my food with people who seem hungry or who seem like they need some food, because I can go home and get more food. I'm okay. So I've given away all my food before, or you can give them a cupcake. And even the scariest kind of, you know, person who you might be scared of, like, they are going to calm down when you give them a cupcake, trust me. So, yeah, cupcakes are a good weapon against fear. But anyway, I don't want to put people off. I might even just delete this whole bit. It's great doing street stall. I've been doing it for years. You have to understand, I'm talking about years of, you know what I mean? Like, this is not the be-all and end-all, but it is interesting. And besides, you're going to encounter people who are on the streets just by being on the streets anyway. So it's not something that you can avoid anyway if you want to go outside. I'm just saying, when you sort of stand there all day, and, you know, you'll get approached. Because like I say, a lot of these people have nowhere else to go, and nobody will talk to them. You know, they've been written off by their families and their friends for whatever reason. The trick is to not let them monopolize you and distract you or scare other people away. Sometimes there's a person I know who, he is homeless. He's very lucid. He's very stable mentally. I have no idea why he's on the streets. Maybe he used to have drug and alcohol problems, but he was a shearer. His family was a massive industry of sheep shearers. They had something 10,000 hectares, or I don't know, it's massive sheep farm. So he helped me a lot. He told me, he really gave me some good information about the work and how, I think I've talked about it in a podcast before. This is the person I'm talking about. He's definitely homeless, and it's just so cold, but he's quite lucid, and like I say, we have pretty decent conversations. I don't really know his, he's talked a little bit about his life, and he is not intimidating to me at all. He's very approachable. He's not threatening or anything, but he's kind. He looks dirty, and you know, he's kind of wild looking. So when he stood there all day, he stood there for quite a while. I was hoping that people weren't judging him by his appearance and not coming over, because they thought, just because he looked dirty and he looked like he'd been in the streets and his, like, he hasn't had a haircut and that he's got no home, and so maybe they might have stayed away. I'm not really sure. I wasn't going to tell him to leave. He just wanted to talk, and he was going to go to the library anyway. And he's been really helpful to me because he was, like I say, a sheep shearer for most of his life. From when he was a little kid, he worked in the industry. He went over to Australia. He was right in there in that industry, and he's been very helpful. So anyway, that was okay. So he was there, and like I said, the other man was there who started saying things where I was just like, okay, goodbye. And but I had a really good day. It was great, and I gave away all the cupcakes. Like I say, I had some really great conversations. The coolest thing with these I wanted to share this with you. Okay. So you know, as you do this more and more, you learn about how to. You just learn from your mistakes, and you still sometimes make mistakes because people will catch you off guard. I'm going to talk about one of the last people who came by. So the first people who came running up were kids, and sometimes when it's a big group of kids, I think, okay, all the cupcakes are going to go within 10 minutes, and really, it's not. So sometimes I'll say, you have to share a cupcake, or if they really want to, I'm like, you cannot have two cupcakes. I need these cupcakes for other people. But what I did with these kids, because they read the sign, and they were really onto it, kids. They were quite young, but old enough to have a conversation with, and they were skateboarders, and they were just this little gang of like four friends, you know, they were all boys. So they came over and they're like, oh, free cupcake, oh, with conversation. And I'm like, yes. And they're like, how long is the conversation? And I was like, well, it's just about veganism. So they were eyeing the cupcakes, you know. And what I did this time, which I don't think I've done very often before, is I gave them a little quiz because I thought I need to engage them. So I always now ask people, a lot of the times what I do when people come up, I started doing this a while ago, is they'll say, oh yes, I'd love to have a conversation, go. And I'll say, okay, so do you know what veganism is? And that's where we begin. What is veganism? And the kids were like, one of them just had no clue. And then, so I did them one at a time. So first of all, the first one came over, and his friends were kind of hanging around. They were a little too shy to come over. And he was the one that I did it with first. So I was like, okay, what is veganism? He's like, you don't eat meat. And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, that's true. But there's a lot more that we use animals for than just eating them. So I was like, can you think of any other things that we use animals for? And he's like, and he couldn't think. And then he's like, and I started giving him little hints. I was like, what other than food? And he was like, well, milk. And I was like, yes, that's food though. And he's like, eggs. And I'm like, yes, that's food. I was like, what else can you think of apart from food? And he was like, he started thinking really hard. He didn't think, because they don't, you know, you don't think about this when you're not vegan, right? You don't go through your life and say, well, animals are used for that. Well, that's an animal use. That's an animal use. That's an animal use. You don't go through that. You don't pay any attention to it until you start thinking about it, or until you go vegan, especially when you go vegan. Then that's pretty much all you think about, because every step of your journey in this speciesist world is watching out for somebody will say, would you like a cookie? And you're like, hang on a minute, let me know, you know, I'm going to look at the ingredients, what's in it. So he obviously wasn't vegan. So then I gave little hints, like I grabbed my own shirt and I wiggled it, and I was wiggling my shirt, my, you know, like the material, like, you know, making it. And he's like, oh right, clothing, oh of course. And I could see him, he's like, wow, that's right, of course, clothing, of course. And he thought of, I can't remember the other ones he thought, but we went through the whole thing, and I could see his eyes getting wider and wider, and he started to realize, and he's like, oh yeah. And I said, you know, entertainment, we put them in tanks, and we put them in cages, and we, you know, run rodeos and circuses. And then I was like experimentation, and so we went through the whole thing. And then I said, okay, so vegans, you know, don't do any of that, because we're against violence, and I often, with young people, especially boys, I'll use the term bully, because it's not a positive term, and I want them to know that, but it's a term they understand. They understand the term of being a bully. A lot of them have been bullied, or maybe they are bullies themselves, and I mean, apart from being non-vegan, I mean, they might be bullies of other kids, but... So anyway, it was great. We did this little quiz, and he's like really thinking about it. And so the coolest thing was that he got his cupcake, and he was like, oh my God, this is so good. And he was raving about the cupcake. So then he went and got his friends, and they came over, and I was like, and I did it all again. And they were just beside themselves wanting to answer the questions, because now they knew. So I was like, you're not allowed to say anything. I was like, nobody say anything, because I did it with like three or four of them separately. And then another one would come over, or they'd say, come over here and get a cupcake. You have to talk to her though. And then I'd say, okay. And we had this great thing going where I was testing them all. And you know, kids are they're just really good. They wanna please. A lot of thing that breaks my heart about children when I think of them being abused or manipulated is they actually really want to please. I don't mean in a subservient way. I mean they want to do, like, they really want to answer the right, make it answer the questions right. A lot of it's caught up because they don't want to get embarrassed, especially when they're at this age. I mean, these boys might have been about 10 or something, so they've been in school where kids are mean and kids tease, but they want to do well. A lot of kids really want to do well. They want to do well. So it was great for them. So the other one would run over and I'd say, okay, first question, what do we use? You know, what do we use it? What's veganism? And the kid would be, and the other ones would be like jumping up and down. And I'm like, shh, don't say it, because I'd see them wanting to answer it, and they'd be like jumping and running. You know how kids are when they get on, like stomping their little feet out of excitement, trying to contain the, like, I know the answer, I know the answer. So we went through it with about three or four of them, and I think it was a really positive experience for them. I really do. They really thought about it, and they came back. They were kind of hanging around because Aotearoa Squares, there's a lot of skateboarders around there, and so they came back later, and they just were begging me for more cupcakes, and I was just like, "No, you cannot have another cupcake. I do not have enough cupcakes to give you another one each. I'm sorry." I gave away about, I think it was a total of four. So the first one came over, then his friend came over, and then it was the two of them and the third kid. And I was asking him the questions, and the friends were like, "Can I give him a clue? Can I give him a clue?" I was like, "Okay, give him one clue." It was fun, actually. It was fun because, but they. I could see it dawning on them, like, wow, we use animals for so many things. And I was like, yeah. So that's a good thing to do. I recommend doing that for young people in a fun, upbeat way, not in a way where they feel like they're going to fail or something, and give them little clues. And if they don't know the answer, you just tell them. You say, okay, you can't think of it? All right, here's another use. And you tell them another one. Like you say, we just use them for entertainment. We put them in. And they say, oh, right. And then they say, oh, and experimentation. Like that'll trigger them to start thinking, hang on a minute. Because they really focus on food, obviously, the most of the time. As we know, that's what people mostly use animals for in terms of the majority of the numbers, right? And the frequency, right? So yeah, that was good. And I'll definitely, I mean, I kind of always do that with young people, but this time it just seemed to go really well because I really broke it down and I made them really think rather than just telling them everything. And do you know what I mean? Like they had to actually think about it and come up with the answers. So I recommend that. And of course there was protests. I think there's going to be protests every Saturday. So protests about Gaza, what's happening in Gaza. So that was brought a lot of people around, but there was a lot of they were talking through bullhorns and things like that. So it's yeah. So the end of the day was kind of taken over by that, but I had a really good morning. It was great, and it was a beautiful day, and it was pretty cold, but I was all right. And I had my synthetic sweater on, and I had my coat, and I had a scarf and a hat and gloves. I was all right. So it was great. But at the end of the day, this woman came up, and she, again, I just got the feeling she might have some kind of, syndrome or something like that. So she just wouldn't. She was telling me all about her life story, very personal things, and speaking very closely, and wouldn't even pause for breath, and just wouldn't stop talking, and in a very sort of, and I was very distracted by her, and she just wouldn't be quiet or stop talking about her personal life in this really kind of intense monotone, and I was getting really tired. It was the end of the day. The protesters had gone. I think I had maybe one cupcake left or no cupcakes left. And I was like, it's time to go. And I wanted to pack up. And then this other woman, this young woman comes along. And this is the one I want to tell you about where I was caught off guard. And I've been thinking about this one all day. Like, oh, I wish I'd handled this differently. I can't take it back now, though. So this woman was just droning on in my ear. And anytime I looked away or got distracted, she'd be like, do you want to go over there and talk to them? Do you want to talk to them? Or do you want to talk to me? And then she's like, you know, I think that you're fair game. I mean, I'm just going to keep talking to you because I figure that anybody who's in the street, but she obviously is someone who really wants to talk, and people probably by now avoid her. Like, if I see her again, if I'm walking down the street or something, I would avoid her. Not because, you know, just because she just does not have this, she will not stop talking in this monotone. I've never seen her before. So she was doing that, and I was distracted, thinking, oh, really, you know, I don't need this. But I did not want to turn to her and say, would you be quiet or please leave? I didn't feel the need to do that, actually. I just let her talk, and it was fine. And I was listening to her. I mean, it was a very interesting story, and it was a sad story. I mean, she was not telling me happy stories. And she had some interesting twists and things to say. I mean, she was had interesting concepts. It wasn't completely bad, but it just certainly wasn't something I was really wanting to spend my time doing at that moment. So then this other young woman comes over, and she said, and this woman was droning away in my ear, and I was listening to her, but then the woman comes up, young woman, maybe about, I don't know, maybe teenager or maybe 20, and she's like, oh, I agree with the concept, but I could never do it. And I was distracted and a little bit irritated because of this person who was droning on. And I said, well, that's not a very, I said, well, that doesn't make any sense, really, does it, if you think about it? Because if you agreed with the concept, then it means that you can do it. I mean, it doesn't make sense to say that. And then she recoiled. I wasn't aggressive or anything, but I was very matter of fact. And she really recoiled, almost with fear. And I should have picked up instantly that this particular person was extremely sensitive and very timid and very overwhelmed person, obviously. Not a strong personality, I didn't think. So she was all like that, and then the other woman started to suddenly talk to her, because sometimes you get people who come over to your store, this is what you also have to watch, and they'll try to advocate with you. These are people who aren't even vegan, who are suddenly saying, oh, well, actually, did it. And I'm thinking, I don't really want you to be advocating, because for all I know, you're going to turn around and say something that's completely misrepresentative and something I do not want represented, you know. So she said, well, it's like the Hindus, you know, it's just like the Hindus. I mean, they revere animals and da 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 da. And I said, well, you know, I was like, oh, well, hang on a minute, veganism's not a religion. And then the woman was like, the one, like I say, this one woman who was telling me her life story was like, oh, well, I mean, but it's all about, and I was like, well, Hindus use animal. And then this poor girl, she was like, well, I didn't mean to offend you. And I was like, you didn't offend me. I'm thinking, this is a really extreme reaction. Like, she looked like she was going to cry. And she was very sort of, I can't think of the word. She was, oh, I didn't mean to offend you. And I was like, no, you didn't offend me. I was like, no, it's okay. I was like, just don't underestimate yourself. You can totally do it. And then the other woman started talking at her, and then she started saying more stuff to me, and I was trying to react to her, and then this girl, she just crept away. She got the heck out of there, and I thought, oh man, I handled that really badly, because she was really overwhelmed by this situation of these, but you know, it's okay. But I keep wishing that I could have a little more time with her, or have that chance again with her. Often you think that with some people, you're like, I wish I could have that chance again with that particular person, you know. But you know, I never, while I do feel that way, and while I do think, oh, I wish I'd done that differently, I never regret actually the fundamental of what I do, because I'm an abolitionist, I do not ever compromise the moral baseline with people. So I have to do that with people. And sometimes I could do it a bit better. Sometimes I could use better wording. Sometimes I could use a different tone, or I could use a different example, or I could use a different, things like that. But not if they compromise the victims. This is what people don't understand. So, yes, she was really overwhelmed because I didn't pick up on the fact that she was very timid, and that it probably took her a lot of guts to come over, and she was probably just looking for a way to talk. Like, I mean, a lot of people say that, oh, I agree with you, but I could never be vegan. I mean, I get that all the time, every day. And usually I just say to them, yes, you totally can. If I can be vegan, you can be vegan. What is it that's stopping you from going vegan? So what is it that's actually stopping you? Generally, it's cheese. you know, something stupid like that, like something so totally and utterly ridiculous. You know what I mean? And you're just like, come on, really? And you can talk about that. But yeah, it was one of those. But I never, yeah, because I don't yell at people. I don't, I'm quite lucky that I don't lose control that way. If I did, I could never do a street stall. You know, I don't swear at people. I don't get violent. And I don't ever compromise. And yes, I wish that I had this. I feel a bit sorry for this girl. I feel like she was freaked out by the situation, and I do regret that. But I also cannot control the fact that she's obviously highly super sensitive, really easily overwhelmed person, because honestly the situation wasn't that overwhelming. I mean, I just know from her reaction and the way she reacted that I was like, oh, she's one of these really delicate people. But that's not really my fault that she's that way. I just didn't pick up on it quickly enough. And by the time, and this woman, like I said, kept, and I was kept being distracted by her, and she was starting to irritate me. It was not a good, yeah, I just keep going back over it because I'm like, oh, I just actually feel a little bit sort of sorry for that girl, actually, to be honest. But anyway, I just feel like she's one of these people who's, oh, I just, you know, one of those really quiet people who just never sticks up for herself, or she's probably gets walked on by people, you know what I mean? And I just wanted to help her, actually, because I kind of, yeah, a lot of women are sort of like that. And anyways, it's hard to see someone who's so sort of so beaten down, or apparently, I mean, this is we had like a 3-minute interaction. I could be totally wrong, but I just got this impression. Anyway, gosh, so it's always really good, really interesting. It's just so worth it. I mean, it's so different from online advocacy. It's so incredibly different because you have body language. I did this assertiveness. It was like I went to this women's conference, and we did, there was a workshop that was only an hour. It was actually a half day or a full day assertiveness workshop that they decided to just, they said, this is actually a full day thing, but we're just going to sort of give you the basics in this hour, because assertiveness is not aggressiveness, but it's certainly not passivity, and it's not, it's a good thing to be assertive, but it's often mistaken with aggression. It's not the same thing. But anyway, so in this exercise, they talked about communication. Communication is the key, right? And they talked about how it's 60% verbal and 40% nonverbal. So if you're talking to someone on the phone, you're only getting 60% of the communication from that conversation. So I said, what about written? And she said, it's going to be even less than 60%, isn't it? Because not only do you not have the body language, you don't have the tone, you don't have the sound and the inflection. We try to do it on print. We try to do inflection with capitals or with little stars, because there's no, I'm mostly on Facebook talking to people, so there's no italics on Facebook. You can't do italics. And italics are useful because they stress certain words, and you can try to tone things in that way, what you really want to stress. So instead you have to do these little highlights of the word with these little stars next to it or whatever. But we try to do that, but it still comes across wrong, and people can totally misconstrue you. And you can't smile. You can put a little smiley face, but it's just not the same, you know. I mean, just those little smiley faces can even piss people off, you know, and be totally misconstrued. So I know it's not that easy for people to sort of set up something formal. Like what I have is quite formal, really. It's a table, and it's got posters, and it's got like the freak food, and I stand there in one place, and it's sort of formalized. So I know that that's not always possible. And it's very different from talking to people you see every day or at work, trying to have a serious conversation at work with people, than it is, you know. I've already talked about that, but if you can even just do it, it doesn't even, like, even if you just do something once every 4 months, if that's all you can manage, there's a little, you know, there might be a little if you just start putting your feelers out and looking for little events where you can have a table, you can save up your money, you can, if you have any other vegans who keep going on about how they want to help and they want to do something, instead of giving their money to the welfarist organizations, maybe you can all get together and pay the $50 that it's going to cost you to have your little table at this festival or whatever. I mean, most of us live in communities where there are things going on, cultural festivals or little things like that, or little markets. There's people all over the world advocating for all kinds of things. You know, it can be done. And there's people selling things. So even like a craft fair or something, even if you only get to go once, the reason I'm saying this is because, yes, it's obviously really good if you can do it regularly, but the practice and the different experience that you get, and it helps you on with your online advocacy as well, because you have to think on your feet when you're at a street stall or when you're talking to someone face to face. And you can have those intense conversations that you might not have right away with someone that you sit next to at work, because they might have a little bit of resentment, or there might be some, you know, but that'll dissipate anyway, trust me. And like I've talked about work before, so if you can just make it happen, because you're going to learn so much about yourself as well. You're going to learn what pushes your buttons when you get a chance to really, really advocate. Because when you do a stall or something like that, you get a chance to really advocate, because you are in this semi-formalized setting, and people are expecting a spiel, a sell. They know that you are there to represent something. It doesn't catch them by surprise the way it might if you're at the supermarket and somebody's like, oh, hey, what's that nice cream that you, what is that? And then you say, well, actually, I'm vegan because I oppose violence and da-da-da-da. And yeah, it could go really well, and it's very good, amazing practice and really wonderful, but it might catch them by surprise or whatever. But when people approach your thing, your stall, they are expecting, they know that this is going to be a serious conversation. So it's a whole different dynamic, and it really helps you grow. It really, really helps you grow, and it makes you feel so good, because you are, you can be in control of the situation in a way that you can't be sometimes, maybe not on a random conversation, or maybe even with your friends and family who know how to push your buttons, or who dismiss you because they've known you all your life, or whatever the case may be. This is different for everybody, but I love doing my street stall. It just, I really never get tired of it. Like, I get so sick of being online and Facebook and stuff. I can't seem to, I'm kind of addicted to the computer a bit, so I need to address that, because I'll sit there and, you know, I'll be on their heaps, so I obviously have some kind of problem, but sometimes I just, and then like, if somebody comes onto my page and makes some kind of ridiculous speciesist comment, some welfarist or something, honestly, I'm just like, I tell you what, even in person, welfarists just drive me nuts. Like, I just can't. I've always been this way, and I have a real problem. So, like, when I have, like, a welfarist vegan come over to the stall and start giving me the baby steps argument and all that kind of stuff, that's where I really get my buttons pushed. And I kind of just, I can't even just be bothered talking to them, you know, honestly, most of the time. And if they're already vegan, then they're vegan. And generally, if someone's really, really, really convinced by welfarism, it's quite tough to get them out of that mindset. So, interesting, isn't it? Interesting, isn't it? So I don't really enjoy... I don't really enjoy debating with welfarists. I never have. Anyway, so I don't do as much of it anymore, because it just doesn't seem to happen. And the really beautiful thing, what am I saying? It happens all the time. But the really cool thing is that there's so many other people who have learned abolition, and they actually can respond, and you don't have to. Like, there's... there's so many people out there who get it now compared to what there was before, that a lot of times I don't have to say anything because someone else does, and I'm like, thank you, they said it, and I don't have to do it now. But if I feel compelled to respond in particular to something, I do it mostly out of righteous indignation, because I am sort of susceptible to feelings of righteous indignation, for better or for worse. So anyway, yeah, first street stall of the winter. Winter's almost over, but it was really a beautiful day, and I'm hoping to do another one this week. I try, like, ideally I would like to do one every 2 to 3 weeks, every single month, but it just, sometimes it just doesn't happen. You know, it used to happen for a while. They're definitely not in the winter. In the summer it's more likely to happen, because it's light at night when you get home, so you can get things done. That in the winter it's just so cold, and you know, I go and come home and it's just so cold. But in the summer you kind of have more time, you have more daylight, you know, to do things during the week, so that your weekends aren't as sort of full with all your chores and, you know, things like that. So anyway, and like I say, even if you can only do it once every 2 or 3 months, do it. Just do it. If you can only do it once, as far as you know, like the whole year, you're like, this is one thing I can do. Don't be like, oh, well, I'm not going to do it because I should be doing it more. You know, I want to do it. It's like, no, do that one thing. Do it. You know, don't feel like you shouldn't do it just because you can't do it regularly. Do it whenever you can. If you have any opportunity and you feel like you can do it, because it's very, very, it's just a really great thing to do. You'll find that, I mean, obviously you have to know your stuff. So if you've been spending the last year, you know, reading arguments on the internet or whatever, that ought to be pretty good, right? I mean, that ought to have given you some ideas, surely, to go out there and put into action, get you pretty much ready for anything. And the arguments against veganism are so few. I mean, they're so repetitive, as we know. I mean, just read the book Eat Like You Care, and you'll just, every single one of those books, anybody who's advocated for veganism, even in an informal setting, like just in your life or just being vegan, you've encountered those objections multiple times, every one. So there are sometimes just little, that's all, it's just different. There's slight different things, that's all. And sometimes somebody will throw something at you out of left field. So it'll keep you on your toes, and I recommend it. So that was great. And and I'm really excited. I found a vegan printing company. The price of colour printing in New Zealand is obscene. And I really want to use... my pamphlets just look so much better in colour, the NZ Vegan ones. Girlfriend Zan's pamphlet, it looks good in black and white anyway, but it still looks cool in colour, everything looks better in colour. So I was tooling around, and there's a vegan printing company. I actually just googled vegan printing, thinking, oh, this won't happen. There's a vegan printing company, it's called Vegan, oh, I'll give you the address. They're American based, Vegan printer.com, veganprinter, all one word, .com. So please, if you are getting stuff printed in bulk, he works from PDFs. I'm sure he does other things. I'm going to be definitely using him. And it's way cheaper for me, believe it or not, to get my stuff printed in the United States and shipped to New Zealand than it is to print them here. Way cheaper. I'm talking like a quarter to a third of the price. It's just ridiculous in New Zealand. So I want to get all my NZ Vegan... literature, but unfortunately it has to be turned into US letter. That's the problem. So hopefully I'm going to have someone help me do that. But in the meantime, I just print black and white, and that's fine. So what else? Yeah, so veganprinter.com. I'm so excited. So great to have that. And yeah, so gosh, I've talked for ages. I was going to talk about the whole situation with the vegan society. So if you are not on the internet very much, or if you are on the internet and you're not on the same places that I'm on, you might not know what's been going on with the UK Vegan Society. And Gary Francione has been challenging the UK Vegan Society, or because, you know, I had no idea how bad things were with the UK Vegan Society until this started to happen. The thing is, you can, yeah, I had no idea how bad it was. So a while ago, they had, this is years ago now, okay, they had, they have a magazine, and Gary Francione wrote an article for the magazine. He's written a couple of articles, I think, for The Vegan, which is called The Vegan. And then I believe he was either reading it, or he was, maybe he was going to write another article or something. And he noticed there was an advertisement for an inn, you know, like a hotel. It's not, but it's like an inn where you stay the night. And it was sold as a haven of peace and tranquility, or words to that effect. But it was not a vegan. In other words, they served animal products on the menu, let alone, I don't know what else, maybe they had feather beds or whatever, for all we know, but they were serving animal products on the menu. So he wrote to the Vegan Society and said, you know, I don't agree with having a non-vegan establishment which promotes animal consumption in the vegan magazine for the Vegan Society. And, you know, taking paid advertisements for this. And it became this really big thing on Facebook, on the Vegan Society's Facebook page, because other people agreed with Gary Francione, some people didn't agree, and it was a huge debate. And they ended up banning Gary Francione from commenting ever again on their Facebook page. And they removed the entire thread. I was on that thread, trying to talk to people about abolition and backing Gary Francione up. This is back in 2011, so things were really quite different then in terms of how many of us were able to, you know, back up Gary Francione, or who were willing to. But there was a few people, and there are people who have no idea. Like, there are vegans who are just not really even advocates, who are outraged by these things because they need a haven. They're very much sort of trusting of the Vegan Society. It's like the oldest. So anyway, this all happened, and he's written a few articles about that event. And because their whole excuse was that they need money. And now I didn't know that. I guess I knew it was a charity, but it has been like there's a new CEO, and apparently I think the CEO is the one who was the CEO back then. So they started to take paid advertisements from, you know, or maybe they were or always had, but I don't believe they had. I think they'd started to do that, and that's why it was noticed. So cut to 2014, and they have this campaign where it says you don't have to be vegan. That's their campaign. And then they say, you don't have to be vegan to love vegan lipstick. You don't have to be vegan to love vegan ice cream. You don't have to be vegan to love vegan shoes or something like that. And the wording of it was, at one point, you don't have to be vegan, period. So it wasn't only that you don't need to be a vegan to use vegan lipstick. It was worded in a way, and I would have to go and find the, because they actually changed it. The good news is so Gary Francione obviously didn't agree with that, and a lot of vegans don't either, so he put that on the table and said, what's going on here? And then there was all these excuses made by the Vegan Society, and they came back and they were all defending it. And then there's like a CEO. I didn't even know like there was a CEO, to be honest, but there is. And they were defending it and making excuses, and they actually changed the wording because of this protest. So they slightly changed it. They didn't change the campaign, they defend the campaign, but there was one sentence that they changed because it literally was like, you don't even have to be a vegan, full stop, or there's no need to be vegan, or something like that, which was really blatant. So then they sort of changed it but all of the rest of the graphics and all of the other statements, like you don't have to be vegan to love vegan ice cream and da da da, those all stayed. And then, so that was going on. And then to add to all that, so that's been going on because there's, it's this really, really troubling. The thing that I wanted to get down to is that I had no idea how bad things were, because this is actually becoming like a corporation. It's turning into a business. The Vegan Society is a business, basically, is what I'm seeing. And they're all about the bottom line. So apparently there's people who were recruited who weren't vegan to work. I mean, I don't want to talk too much about the details because I always get my facts wrong, but things are very, very troubling. And I'll post some links so you can have a read for yourself. So that was happening. And Gary Francione, of course, you know, there is a reason why, the reason why Gary Francione exposes this hypocrisy is because it's hypocrisy and it needs to be exposed. This is the Vegan Society, the original Vegan Society. And if we don't call out the Vegan Society for compromising veganism, then we are really not getting it. It's not just about calling out non-veganism. If veganism is being eroded and misrepresented by vegan societies and vegan groups, then, you know, with that in their name, like vegan outreach, that's why we are always like critical of vegan outreach. So there is a reason for this. You know, I wish that, you know what would be best, you know what would be great, if this didn't have to get done, because, you know what, because they didn't compromise veganism, that would be so cool, then we wouldn't have to do this. But it has to be done because it's so important, because people don't realize it, and it's very beguiling as well, and people get sucked into it because it's these big, well-established things, and there's glitzy marketing, and they've got heaps of professionals working for them, who sort of make everything look very flash, and it's not till it's sort of the splash of cold water that Gary Francione is, where he's like, what is going on here? What is going on? And then everybody's like, oh, you're such a drag, you know? And it's like, hey, he's not the drag. What is happening is the drag. That is a drag. It is very bad. So they had this terrible campaign, and they've been defending it all over the place. And it's all over Facebook in terms of the Vegan Society, and obviously on Gary Francione's Facebook page. But if you don't go on those Facebook pages, yes, there are. And the really good thing, which I'm so pleased about, because this isn't kind of how it was a few years ago. If I remember rightly, we were pretty much outnumbered. Like, we were pretty outnumbered as usual. But this time, there are heaps of vegans who are outraged by this. They are like, what is going on with the Vegan Society? Come on. They're not happy, and they're not being part of it anymore. They're refusing to have anything to do with it and saying, I'm not going to be a member anymore. You do not represent me. You do not represent veganism. And when the Pandora's box of this got opened by Gary Francione's speaking out about it and people investigating it, and them, you know, and then the thing is, if you're going to come on and try to defend it, then you're asking for more investigation, and you're making claims. Well, those claims are going to be critically examined. So they, you know, that's the name of the game. I mean, if I go out and make claims, they have to be critically examined. When I put out my podcast, when I was really new and I was very ignorant and I was a new vegan, and I made a podcast, I think it's episode 6, where I basically stated that I didn't think that you could be clinically obese, which is a certain, it's almost like an illness, obese in terms of clinical obesity, from what I was ignorant about obesity. And I was like, I don't think that you can eat a vegan diet and be clinically obese, which is like a certain measurement of BMI. And there, I was set straight like immediately by people who were like, your facts are wrong. Get your facts straight. And I instantly went on and admitted. I mean, they sent me links and stuff, and I was wrong. And I was embarrassed, and I was like, I'll be more careful, you know, thank you. But I didn't have any income at stake. You know, my income didn't depend on that. So I guess maybe that's the difference. I'm really wondering if that's the difference between you know, my podcast and me being out and me sort of having to admit that I'm wrong, and people like this who make money off this and have, you know, admitting that they were wrong and changing things might mean that they don't make as much money. I don't know. I mean, I'm just wondering, like, anyway, and this is not as, this is all very, it's, there are facts, like, there's so many things to talk about with this. You just have no idea how bad it goes. But in terms of this, I'm just talking about this, why you don't have to be vegan to do this campaign. These are things when we're talking about concepts of morality and the best tactics that work, and there's this whole pervasiveness about how you can't be unequivocal about the moral baseline because you'll scare people away and nobody will ever go vegan and all this rubbish, which I just wrote in a status update about. So anyway, so the Vegan Society was defending it, and then there was all these things coming to light, and there were people who were involved in the Vegan Society who no longer involved who were like, yeah, it was disgusting, and then they had a meeting about it because the really great thing is that the people, vegans who sort of were woken up to this by reading the criticisms were like, hang on a minute, I don't agree with this. And they were challenging the Vegan Society, and the Vegan Society had to sit up and take notice. They couldn't just ignore it like a little, oh, those little abolitionists in the corner buzzing away, we'll just completely ignore their existence. No, 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 no. It did not happen. They are really having to answer up to this and to deal with their members' outrage about this. So that's a good thing as far as I'm concerned. So then another thing that happened is there's a marathon runner who is a vegan and is a very successful marathon runner. Her name is Fiona Oakes, and she's a really amazing athlete. And she, as a representative of the Vegan Society, you know, I mean, someone who's that successful as an athlete who's vegan, that's a good thing, right? But anyway, she had an interview on the BBC, and she said that veganism is not for very many people. It's not for everyone, and it's, she said it's not for everyone, and it's not probably for very many people. Which, if you don't think there's anything wrong with that, then you and I fundamentally disagree on a lot of things. I'm just telling you that right now. So Gary Francione, on top of all this other stuff that's been going on with this, you don't have to be vegan to eat vegan ice cream campaign from the Vegan Society, was made was outraged at what this woman had said, and said, this is the representative of the Vegan Society, and she's saying that on the radio. I mean, this is really bad idea and not good for animals. And she is, what happens is you get people who are really held in really high regard, and also she runs an animal sanctuary. So there were a lot of people who were upset that she was being criticized, her statements were being criticized. And then she was upset, and she wrote an article, because she was made aware of these criticisms, and she called people who, she characterized people who were opposing what she said and who are saying that veganism must be this fundamental moral baseline, that we were fundamentalist nutters, which, if you don't think there's anything wrong with that, then you and I really disagree with so many things. So this got really ugly, because how can you, that is so wrong to do that, to just take that position, and then, you know. And people were defending it, saying she was on the spot, and she was, there was all kinds of excuses. There was, number one excuse was that she's not allowed to be unequivocal about veganism in a BBC radio interview. Like, they would have forbidden that before she was tossed. There was all these kind of, I think people were really defensive. And then I don't think that's true at all. And then there was another one was like, oh, well, she was caught by surprise by the question because she's this marathon runner, and they were talking about her endurance, like she had just won another event or some other prize or something. She's like a really successful athlete. And then they talked about her veganism, and then she just came out with this. And people were like, oh, she was put on the spot, and she, you know, it just came out. It doesn't really, well, you know, if that's true, then why would she go and write this article about and saying that, defending the statements and then saying that we're fundamentalist nutters because we have a problem with it? And also, as far as I'm concerned, And I said this in a comment, as far as I'm concerned, if that is what comes out of your mouth when you're caught by a surprise question about veganism, that is very troubling, and you need to start reading up on abolitionist literature and reading about the concepts of sticking up for the rights of others and not compromising them. Because if that's what comes out of your mouth automatically, then that's a very troubling indication of how you view what ought to be advocacy on behalf of these animals. So it's troubling no matter what the excuse was, because that would never come out of my mouth now, maybe when I was a brand new vegan. And I would like to think that if it did come out of my mouth publicly on the BBC, which I will never get the opportunity to be on the BBC, but if I was, and then somebody came along and said, that's a really bad idea, I would see that it was a bad idea and take that, you know, medicine of and sort of be like, yeah, I need to examine that, rather than, you know, making it really, really, you know, turning around and saying, well, you're just a fundamentalist nutter or whatever the case may be. So it's very easy to say what you would do. I'd like to think that that's what I would do. I know it's not easy to be criticized, so nobody's saying it is, but it's very troubling. So then it gets even worse. So meanwhile, the Vegan Society is defending Fiona Oak's statement. She's completely writing posts about how we're fundamentalist nutters because we, you know. And then there's a gentleman called Tim Barford, who is the manager of a big festival called VegFest. And he defended Fiona Oak's comments by saying that veganism, a vegan diet, is... you'll probably get ill on a vegan diet. And he's since retracted those statements, but it was all very, very damaging what that was coming out of the Vegan Society sort of area of people. Very, very, very scary and troubling, and I just have been sitting back and I just cannot believe it. And so many people are like that. They're just like, I cannot, what the heck is going on? You just don't, I guess we should be, I always really, you know, I was really troubled about this ad in that magazine and the way they defended it and things. It has only gotten worse over the last 3 years. So then lots of things have come to light. Like I say, there's a CEO, and then there was like a spokesperson for the Vegan Society who I believe was a paid staff member, who was making all kinds of outrageous comments, going along with Tim Barford's statement that veganism makes people ill and most people get ill on a vegan diet, which he, like I say, he has since retracted that statement of fact, saying that, yes, it's not a factual statement. And but this is really damaging. But the good news is now the conversation is out there, and people are like, this conversation's a waste of time, and, you know, we shouldn't be worrying about this stuff. And I'm like, you just have got it so wrong. This is part of the conversation we should be having. This is part of the conversation that's going to get animal rights into the mainstream conscious. People who aren't vegan, who are reading about this debate, are going to see that there is a real animal rights movement that isn't going to put up with this garbage, and that is going to dispute what the mainstream movement, including the Vegan Society, which is now pushing flexitarianism in these statements and really moving away from veganism as a moral baseline, which is not where they started. They started it with veganism as a moral baseline. I'm all in favor of this debate coming to light. I am so sick of people basically saying we're all on the same team, and what they mean is shut up. That is what they're telling us. Shut up. Well, we're not going to shut up. We are not going to shut up. This is about animal rights. This is about animal rights. So get used to it, because there is an animal rights movement that is very vocal, who is not going to shut up and go away. And if you don't like it, that's just too bad. We're here to stay. And these are very important conversations that need to be being had. And if you are interested in the issues and you care about the issues, at least read the comments, and both sides are getting a chance to comment, because everybody can have a Facebook page and everybody can comment. So that's the beauty of, you know, free speech. So you can read and make up your own mind about who you agree with or who you don't agree with. But this is a very important conversation to be having. And I would like to think that it is helping to prevent a lot of people from following the Vegan Society down this really compromised road and making them realize. And there are people who are saying, we don't need them. I certainly don't need the Vegan Society to go out and do my street stall. You know what I mean? So it's really, but I can't, I don't, I'm really bad at, I get my facts wrong in terms of who said exactly what. I get numbers and figures wrong. That's why I'm not, I mean, I'm not like, yeah. But there's just been so much information and so much going on. But Gary Francione's website has all of the statements, and it has, and his Facebook page has a lot of the debate. And there's people who went to, because the Vegan Society has not been able to ignore this and make nothing out of it, because so many vegans are upset with them and are saying what is going on and demanding answers and demanding that they be held accountable for their campaign and for the defense of these comments. And also Tim Barford and Gary Francione had a debate, or attempted to have a debate, on Bob Linden's Go Vegan Radio. Which really didn't, I don't know, it certainly, I don't think it was the most productive platform, because there's heaps of ads and heaps of interruptions and stuff, because it's actually commercial radio, there's just like heaps of, it's like very formatted, and so there was lots of interruptions. And but Tim Barford was on there, he agreed to come on. Gary Francione is always willing to allow other people to try to argue with him. He's not worried about that. And again, Tim was quite happy to go because he wanted to stand by his position. But he actually, like I say, retracted his statement about the health thing, which is very important. It was really important for that to happen, for the retraction to happen. So things have been just... yeah, really troubling. And the thing is, if Gary Francione hadn't had the guts to really shout about all of this and make a noise about it, they would just get away with it, and they shouldn't get away with that, because it's really bad for non-humans, for the Vegan Society to be compromising the moral baseline, and for a vegan athlete to be saying that veganism is not for everyone and probably not for very, very many people, which makes it seem like it's only for this elite few. And then they're actually defending this, saying it's all part of this reverse psychology, and that this is like the most, and they're saying, no, this is a way to get people to go vegan, and we have a strategy, and this strategy is working. Our "you don't have to be vegan to buy vegan ice cream" campaign is working, and they're claiming all of these things. So it's, there is a debate happening, and I really urge you to, if you're interested in these things, and if you want to know what's going on in the world of vegan representation on our planet, then I do recommend keeping up with the latest stuff like this that's going on, just so you can be informed. Because I'm certainly not going to promote the Vegan Society, I'll tell you that much. Whereas before, you know, a while ago, I might have. I would have said, oh, there's a Vegan Society, you know. Now when I mention it, and I mention Donald Watson, I have to, you know, add a link and say, you know, obviously the Vegan Society has changed, and this is what it's like now, and, you know, I have to have that, that disclaimer. But I just, okay, so I just really want to support Gary Francione and his standing up and about these things, and not being quiet about them. And you know, there's very good reasons for doing it, which are always misconstrued. He's always attacked about it. Again, from this whole "we're on the same team" thing, which we have addressed a million times. So I just want to read something that I wrote, because it's just easier if I read it. which addresses, because I listened to the debate, the second part, because what happened is the first debate didn't go very well, so the second, so then they decided to come, I'm talking about the debate between Gary Francione and Tim Barford, who's the manager of this giant festival called Veg Fest in England. And they had a follow-up to it, and I just listened to it, and it didn't get past, there was only, the one question was really asked, I believe, or maybe two, and basically, I'm going to read what I wrote because it's just easier that way. So here's my status update. So I said, listening to the second part of the debate between Gary Francione and Tim Byford. So far, we're just at the first question. All right, regarding having part-time carnivore, there's a group called Part-Time Carnivore, and they're attending Veg Fest. Oh yeah, and there's more. Oh gosh, I've got to tell you. So not only, so the thing that's really been really freaky, like all of this stuff has been uncovered, which I wouldn't have realized. It doesn't really surprise me that much to find out about this Veg Fest, you know, what have, but there's like, there's, they have a group, this will give you an idea. There's a group called Part-Time Carnivore, and the name says it all right, who are invited and who are having a stall at Veg Fest. So, and there's worse, I mean, there's so much going on with that and Veg Fest, and like their goal is like for people who are at like looking at like cutting down, and there's not really much advocating of veganism apparently. But anyway, so there's this group called Part-Time Carnivore. So Gary Francione asked him about it because we found out, or had Gary Francione or somebody found out about this group being invited to Veg Fest, and so he, this is subsequent to the last, to the first debate. So here's my status update. So I was like, so far we're just at the first question regarding having groups like Part-Time Carnivore attend Veg Fest. Tim is justifying this by saying cutting down to say 20% animal products is still going to have an immensely positive effect on the environment and human health, as well as decreasing by 80% the amount of animals used. To be honest, I don't even think he mentioned that. I believe I recall him saying, and I quote, "Let's put the animals aside for a moment," end quote. But he was saying that if you talk about, in regards to part-time carnivore, if you say someone consumes 20% animal products, then it's better than for the environment and for their health to consume 100%. And so my status update is like, well, nobody's disputing that less harm is better. Nobody is disputing that 20% is better than 100%. Nobody has ever disputed that. It's not an issue that we focus on when we're talking about human rights campaigning against, you know, for fundamental human rights abuses like rape. For example, less rape is better, right? So should we campaign for less rape? No, we should and do campaign for no rape. You see the parallel there? I don't want it to, it doesn't have anything to do with whether it's legal or illegal or accepted or normalized or what type of person commits rape compared to what type of person has an ice cream sundae. That's not the point. The point is when you're talking about fundamental human rights in which the same applies, less is better, right? I mean, that still applies. You do not have campaigns for less. You have campaigns for none. You have campaigns for abolition. So, and this is what I said, the main theme of Tim's position here and of every single other welfarist I've debated myself in various places is the same one. Their position is if you advocate for veganism unequivocally, not only will people not even begin to think about these issues at all, and therefore, because they won't even begin to think about them, that means they will never start to examine animal use, which would lead them to start cutting down on their own anyway, of their own volition. You know, highly likely based on the issues they're beginning to think about because they were talked to about veganism. They're saying not only will they not do that, but they will completely and utterly, down to the last person, freak out, reject the entire thing, and will make no reductions and might even increase animal use out of some kind of perverse notion. And they will never ever go vegan or ever cut down animal use or ever even have their consciousness raised in the slightest bit about the immorality of animal use. This is their claim. Based on this erroneous belief, they claim we have to therefore promote meat-free Mondays or part-time carnivore or welfarist reforms or cutting down basically everything but veganism, and we cannot promote veganism unequivocally or hold veganism as the moral baseline. Otherwise, they claim no one will make any changes ever. That's their position. That's the position that they justify what they do on. And does that make sense to you? It doesn't make any sense to me either. So that's what I've trying to say so many times to people, but this is really their justification, and I've literally, this is what they believe, and I'm not kidding. So this is what, you know, I mean, I find that absurd. So anyway, if you have a listen to the debate, you'll hear Tim basically saying that. And he actually did literally ask Gary Francione, what about the people who say, who really don't care, who say they're never going to change? And first of all, that's been, I mean, I know that Tim has not, he has not really been, you know, read, no, he didn't know, he claimed he'd never even heard of Gary Francione until a couple of weeks ago. So he doesn't know that this has been talked about, like, for, you know, the last sort of 7 years intensely by more and more people, but also that Gary Francione has been writing books about this kind of thing for like 30 years. He doesn't know that. So that's fine. But he did literally say, and this is like, again, the typical is like, oh, what about people who don't care? You know, what about them? And, you know, as we've said, as Gary Francione says in the debate with Eric Marcus, I recommend listening to that debate. There was no ads. It was completely ad free. It was just on a podcast. So he's, you know, first of all, if they didn't care at all, then why are they going to care enough to cut down? Why would they cut down? Why would they buy Happy Meat that's supposedly humane if they don't care? Why? It doesn't make sense that if somebody doesn't care at all, they're only going to care a little bit or this much. If they don't care, they don't care. If they care a little bit, then you've got a chance to talk to them about caring a lot more, which means going vegan. And they can do whatever they're going to do in the meantime, but you are talking to someone who cares, and that's all you need to justify talking about veganism, right? Which, as we've said. And also, so first of all, it doesn't make sense to say that they don't, you're talking to someone who doesn't care at all, but we're going to sell them Happy Meat. Well, then they care, right? I mean, either they care or they don't care. Which is it? And then, you know, and then the second part, obviously, is like, let's worry about the people who do care. There are actually people out there who really literally say they don't care, and they just don't care. And they're like, I'm not, just don't give a damn. I think animals are trash and I'm just going to eat them, and just, you can just bugger off. And yeah, I'm not going to really worry too much about that, because for every person who says that, there's plenty more people who do care. I know this for a fact because I have been out in the streets, and the internet is very skewed. You get a very skewed view. There's a lot of people who troll the internet who are way more likely to comment and make negative comments than people who really do actually care. And have, you know, a lot of people don't take the time to comment and stuff like that. But there's plenty of negative trollers and really horrible people who do nothing but comment horribly, because that's how they get their kicks. And they can't get away with it in the street, and they can't get away with it at work, and they can't get away with being that nasty. But these are people who might have personality disorders, or I don't know, and that is the way that they get their kicks. So the internet is overwhelmed with that, and it's an imbalance, and it gives you a skewed view of the world. If I met, you know, all the people I've met who are like, oh my gosh, people will never go vegan, I just hit on the internet, and I'm like, well, get off the internet and go and talk to people, and you'll find it's very different in the real, you know, in the world. Just forget the internet. The trolls are just beyond belief. And when you are dealing with some troll or somebody who's just like leaving comments, or you're on a thread and it seems to be like a lot of people jumping on, they get all their friends to come on and stuff, just think of the people reading who aren't commenting, who do actually care, who are reading because they're interested, and make your comments for them. Make them, you know. But anyway, yeah, so it's been a really tumultuous few weeks. I mean, I haven't really been that affected by it, because there's so many other advocates out there who have been really actively involved in this debate. I haven't been involved that much because they're saying everything that I want to say, so I can take a rest. It's quite nice, actually. I'm taking a bit of a rest, and these other ones are commenting, and I'm just like, oh, yes, thank you for saying that. Now I don't have to type out this whole big giant paragraph because you already covered it. Thank you very much. So it's been quite good to see. But anyway, it's just so important. And it hasn't really gotten any better. This is still going on. But the good news is, like I said, a lot of vegans are realizing this and realizing what's wrong with it. And they're starting to realize they can't. Even the vegan society, you can't rely on to be unequivocal about veganism. So, but there is an alternative to that. There is abolitionist movement, which you don't need to be a group or to be affiliated with anybody to advocate for abolition. It's, yeah, you just do it. Just read the books, you know, educate yourself, and just start putting that knowledge out there, sharing it with people, and see what happens. So, anyway, so I've got heaps of links to post, so I'll do that. And that's about all I have to say today. So I will leave you there. And thank you very much for listening. I hope you got something out of this, and at the very least were inspired to start to think about how you can get out and advocate abolition in your society. And it's great. It's very effective thing to do, trust me. Well, it is for me, and it is for everybody else I know who's doing it. You might be the exception, but you'll never know until you get out there. And if you are, please write to me. Oh, that's right. I was going to talk about. Oh, that's right. This is really important. Sorry, I should have talked about this at the beginning. There is somebody in England, Ben Frost, who's an abolitionist advocate, who's been wanting to do a street stall for a while, and he approached his local council, and it turned out to be a real headache. And then it turned out when we were trolling through the council policies, because they were trying to throw all these policies at him, that there was a free speech policy that basically said the distribution of literature for either religious purposes or a personal belief cannot be disputed. You don't need to ask permission, and you don't need, you can just do it. And so what I want to say to people who I've often talked about going to your council and making sure it's okay and stuff, first thing you should do, rather than giving yourself a big, great, big, giant headache, is examine the free speech laws and the distribution of literature laws and things, similar things like that, in your local council policies. Memorize it, print it out, and take it with you, and set up a tiny little table, and then just, and you can sort of establish yourself there as like a non-violent kind of non-harassing kind of positive thing. And then, if there is, like, if you do that and they say, what are you doing? And you're like, here, this is legal, and look, I'm not bothering anybody, I'm doing activism, but I have a right. Look, read this, your own policy and stuff. And if you prove to these, to, you know, the security guards or whoever it is that you're dealing with, that you are actually pretty cool, and that it's not a, there's no hassle for them, and you're not causing any trouble, then they're gonna be okay with it. And then you can start to bring in cupcakes and things like that once they, because I'm pretty much a fixture on Queen Street now. I'm not there very, I mean, I'm not there nearly as much as I'd like to be, but when I'm there, people recognize me, and I know that the council people know that I'm there, but they have never seen anything, any problems happen. And as far as I know, they've never received a complaint about me. They've never received a complaint about me. If they have, I certainly haven't heard about it. So once you do that, you can establish it, and then, so in a way, maybe don't go straight to the council and start saying, oh, I want to do this, I want to do that. And I just really want to let you know that maybe you don't have to do that, and I don't want to cause any headaches for people who may be doing that. And then the council, now that you've made it their problem and are saying, hey, I want to do this, and then they're like saying, oh, great, now we have to look at our policies, and they might just get a headache. If you just do it, just make sure you have a right for free speech, and you have a right to distribute literature, because that's important, because there's this whole thing about environmental reasons, like waste, paper. But they cannot stop free speech in countries like England, America, and New Zealand and Australia. Okay, I'm not sure about some of the European countries, but I'm sure that they're fine. Spain, I mean, there's heaps of vegan activism in Spain. There's vegan activism in France. There's vegan activism in South America, Brazil, Colombia. So you can do it. So do it with this backup, and then maybe you don't even have to get a street trading license or anything like what I did. I probably did it backwards, and that's fine. I got away with it, and it was easy because they finally just gave me one. But don't, I'd rather people not get a big headache if all they have to do is just do it. Don't have to ask anyone's permission or make sure that you're. So, that's my advice, is like, just check out the go to the council website of wherever you live, look through their policies, and look for things like free literature distribution or advocating a belief and things like that. Don't even have to write to them, just find it yourself. They might not even know this policy exists anyway. And find it yourself. And then if you find something that you see is really clearly backing up the fact that you can go out in the street, you can set up a little table to distribute literature. You can hand out literature without getting harassed because you're not doing anything to break the council policies, and you've got that backup, then just do it. And then when they do approach you, you don't have to make a big fuss or make a big drama. You can just say, actually, I went on the website and I checked it out, and I found this piece of policy, this piece of legislature that says I have a perfect right to be here, so therefore that is under what I'm acting. You know, I didn't come here without knowledge. I know that I have a right to do this. And so I think that's a good way of doing it. So yeah, I just really wanted to mention that. And now Ben has been dealing with a very annoying council, but he's, and he tried to be a very mindful citizen and let them know and say to them, I want to do this. And so, we're going to keep in touch about this, Ben and I, and, he is going to go along and see how things go and, try to sort of get things going. And I believe he's going to have to just go out there and do it and just not, you know, if they come and say anything to him, he's just going to have this piece of paper. He's going to have this policy, I should say. It's a real policy that they have implemented. And depending on how things go, if he manages to make it happen, I want to have Ben on my podcast as a guest. And we're going to talk about it. And he can tell us all about what happened and how he resolved it and, you know, how his events are going or his street stall or whatever he ends up doing. So that's an ongoing thing. I mean, he has to do it, you know, and it's, of course, obviously it's all going to be him because, you know, all the other vegans are welfareists. So as far as I know, he doesn't have another abolitionist in the city who's going to help him. I could be wrong. So he's going to do it by himself, just like I did. So I'm really looking forward to hearing about it. I just hope things go well. And I really do hope that I can have Ben on to talk about it. But I want to wait until he actually does an event, like does a street stall or does a day, at least one day, so he can talk about it. And if it's a, you know, if something happens and it's not a good experience, we still need to talk about it because we need to share these experiences with people so people can learn. Because I still really, really believe that getting out into the street is just so critically important to our movement. So hopefully, so keep your fingers crossed that things go smoothly for Ben. He is a wonderful advocate and I really am very much looking forward to him sort of expanding to street advocacy. So anyway, keep posted for that. I'll keep you updated no matter what, but I'll definitely have Ben on as a guest anyway, so we can just talk about it. So thank you so much for listening and I'll be back.